Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Brian Spinner. Brian Spinner is a husband and father of two girls. He has spent his career in information technology and worked at the White House for 2.5 years. For the last 5 years, he has worked as a pre-sales engineer and most recently as a technical business analyst for Tag Solutions. Brian enjoys staying fit by road biking, running, tennis, and especially playing ice hockey. He builds an ice rink in his backyard each winter for himself, his family, and the neighborhood kids. Brian is an avid outdoorsman and has a passion for fishing. He is a licensed New York State outdoor guide with the White Dog Trail Company and has been featured in 2 national outdoor magazines for trips he guided. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's very nice to have a White House worker here.
Yes, links to the administration.
I bet he's never heard that one before.
Yeah.
Well, what did you do in the White House?
I was technical support for 2.5 years. At first, it was just doing kind of end user support. And very quickly, they decided to put me directly into the White House and be primary support for the staffers there. Eventually, I got to deploy most of their BlackBerries, which, believe it or not, at the time was a brand new thing. This goes back to like 2001 or so, just after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
So all the important people were getting them, and they weren't even phones or anything. They were just literally getting email, but they put their top person on it, supposedly. So that was me.
So who was in charge? Was it Clinton?
No, that was back in the Bush administration.
Bush.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And did you meet the president? Or?
Not face to face necessarily, but you'd see him walking by, and you know,
what kind of cologne did he wear?
Yeah. Some Southern thing probably. You see a lot of, it was always interesting because you never knew who you were going to see. You're going in there to help people, but it quickly just became a regular workplace, believe it or not. And but there was still that wow factor of, you know, who am I going to see today?
Yeah. And did you see any famous people, any like world leaders or anything like that?
Ariel Sharon.
Israel?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah. And, you know, a bunch of people would come through. They'd actually, and I kick myself now, but every time an NBA team or a hockey team won, they'd come to the White House and you got an invite.
Oh, cool.
And for whatever reason, we never went just because we were busy. And we said, oh, there'll be a next time. And really, really should have taken advantage of some of those things.
Well, hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And sometimes we let these things slip. I let one of those slip in Rochester's of all places. I was at my wife at the time was working as in a festival, the Lilac Festival, and two musicians were on the show. One was the Bare Naked Ladies, and the other one was Johnny Cash.
Oh, cool!
And I was young at the time, and I said, "I'll go and see Bare Naked Ladies." Johnny Cash, he's an old guy, you know. And I remember hearing him, but wasn't there. You know, it was the other side of the fence. And then it wasn't until later years I was like, I wish I'd done that.
Yeah.
It was a big mistake.
A legend.
One of the biggest regrets in my life is not seeing Johnny Cash, you know. But same sort of thing as you. So, Brian, I was looking at your biography, and one question I have for you. What is a pre-sales engineer?
Yeah. All my career, I've really been in the technical part of it. When I finally moved to Tag Solutions, probably 5 years ago now, I moved into a pre-sales role, which is basically you need to understand all of the technology and all of the underlying things, but be able to work with customers to the point where you can understand what they need. So my whole purpose is to make sure that my customers, that I understand their problems and that I can apply the right solutions to them and make sure that they're always getting what they need. My main goal.
Are your customers organizations or people or?
Mostly organizations. We're mostly a business to business kind of.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Now, you like sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see you like running and cycling and
tennis. Mean, most of that is to, I enjoy tennis. I enjoy hockey. Running, I do because it keeps you in shape.
Mm-hmm. Tennis is just, the Wimbledon's just started.
Yeah. My wife is really the tennis fan in the house. Right, she grew up playing tennis. She was actually the number one on the boys' team in high school. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I don't win when I play against her, but we love to play. We right. both love to play. When the big, mostly Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, when they're on in my house, that's all that's on.
Do you become a tennis widow? Does your wife say, sorry, you're making the dinner tonight, I'm watching the tennis?
Yeah, kind of. I could only take so much of the U.S. Open or Wimbledon because it's right. just on all day, though. Right. I do enjoy the matches, but especially when they go five sets, you know,
yeah.
it's a long day if you get too into it.
And you know, so are you more of an outdoor man?
Yeah, that's really, I always kind of have been definitely into the outdoors. It's kind of raised that way, I guess.
Yeah. Do you do camping and stuff like that?
Yeah. We've camped all of our lives. I don't do a lot of backpacking per se.
Oh, Mike will be disappointed by that one, I think.
A little bit.
Yeah. I love being in the outdoors, but then I love my bed at night. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Although if you get the right gear, you can bring your bed with you, basically.
Yeah. Well, I have two girls and a wife, so when we go camping, it tends to be that.
Nice.
We'll do the canoe camping, or I'll actually have a small motorboat. We'll take our motorboat out, and it's primitive site camping, but we have a motorboat, so it's, how primitive is it? But you know, there's wildlife around, but you know, you're sleeping on air mattresses and stuff like that. That's not the way I'm used to camping. But when you've got, you know, two girls, I guess
it's not Bear Grylls, is it?
Yeah, not quite. No.
It's not man versus wild.
The kids love it, though. So, I mean, we're really psyched that the kids are old enough to really enjoy that stuff now.
And it's a good way to introduce the kids to some sort of, you know, wildlife and outdoors, as a, you know, and for them to realize it's not just all about computers and games and texting. And
it's always been one of my main things, is that I need my kids to appreciate the outdoors, and we definitely do things to make sure that is happening. We have a camp up in Old Forge. We spend a lot of time there. There's deer everywhere. They love to be up there. That's probably their favorite place, actually.
When I first came to this country in 1993, and I went to a summer camp, And it wasn't far from Old Forge, actually.
Oh, really?
It was Long Lake I was on.
Yeah.
And we're on a Camp Nazareth it was. And I remember going to Old Forge, and it was a lovely little place, you know.
It is. It's a nice little town.
Quiet and quaint. And you can't beat that, you know. It's really a nice part of the country. In fact, you know, pretty much most of New York State's beautiful.
There's so much to explore in New York. It really is.
Yeah.
Let's play a song. This one's going to be In the Cage by Genesis. Now, this is actually part of an album, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which tells the story of a half-Puerto Rican juvenile delinquent named Real. I think it's Real. It's supposed to be like Gabriel.
Right. As in Peter?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It is. This kid's living in New York City, and he swept underground to face bizarre creatures and nightmarish dangers to rescue his brother John. Several of the story's occurrences and places were derived from Peter Gabriel's dreams, and the protagonist is based on the surname Gabriel. That's where they're really comes from.
Yeah. And in this particular song, you can tell it's leading into a dream.
Right.
Nice.
Excellent.
Some things about Genesis. In this song in particular, the cage, this is the part of the story where Real wakes up in a cage of stalactites and stalagmites slowly closing in toward him, but he sees his brother standing there, and he calls to his brother John, but then John walks away and the cage disappears. It was made in 1974. And interestingly, not about this song, but you've heard that Phil Collins song, In the Air Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in college, all the kids, you know, I heard from people that said, oh yeah, what happened was Phil Collins was like
out swimming with some friends, and his one friend drowned, and there were these people nearby, and they didn't do anything to help. So Phil Collins sent tickets to one of his shows to one of these people, and then put the spotlight on him and sang the song. And apparently, that's just a complete myth.
Yeah, it's a hoax.
Yeah,
and Phil Collins. I googled it one day because I was curious too.
Yeah, and he said himself, like, a lot of his songs have meaning, but that one in particular, he wrote it while he was getting divorced. He was very angry, and it doesn't mean anything. He doesn't know what it means, and it's frustrating to him that people kind of are creating these rumors, because he's like, no, it doesn't mean anything at all.
I got sunshine in my stomach, like I just rocked my baby to sleep. I got sunshine in my stomach, but I can't keep me from creeping sleep. Sleep deep in the deep.
that was Genesis in the Cage. Nice choice, Brian. Well done. Why did you pick that song?
Well, my brother kind of introduced me to Genesis back when we were kids, back in high school. Mm-hmm. He literally had a goal of having every single Genesis album ever owned or ever made. And he would listen to them all the time, and so I would listen to them all the time. I remember listening to a lot of stuff. He was heavy into keyboards and different things. And In the Cage is it's just one of those songs that kind of gets the blood going a little bit.
Right,
the keyboards especially, I think, along with the percussion, really kind of like get it moving. And it's just it's not the Genesis, I think, that most people of this age probably think of. A lot of the older generations probably think of that kind of Genesis, but you know, it's so I like the older stuff. I like before they got soft.
Now, are you a Gabriel or a what do you call them?
Phil Collins. You know, I like them both. I really, really liked the live stuff they did. I think it was The Way We Walk. They did a whole tour, and they had a couple of live albums, the shorts and the longs. It was really the long album that really, really got me hooked on Genesis. And that was around the time my brother actually went to one of their shows in Syracuse.
Right.
And the whole Firth of Fifth and the whole long medley that they did, it was like 20-something minutes long. It's just, you know, it was killer, and that really kind of...
Yeah, they were really big for a while, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were really, really massive, so... Well, so would you say then that the song kind of takes you back to your...
Oh, sure. It takes me back to my brother's bedroom, actually.
Right.
In my mom's house.
Yeah.
Of us just listening to music.
You know, I've said this in a few shows, you know, and, you know, some songs take you back and it reminds you of smells and looks of rooms and, and you know, all that sort of stuff. And I think we're getting further away from that. Kids are now just got songs on iPods and... various items, and they don't seem like possessions anymore. They're just, you know, computer programs on a machine now. They're not, you don't go and buy records anymore, you know, or CDs or anything like that. So they're not prized possessions anymore.
Yeah. I mean, we literally, a lot of our CDs were prized possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And even before that, I mean, the next song is actually... It was on vinyl.
Yeah. I was about to say that. Vinyl, you know, a lot of vinyl albums were, you know, it wasn't just the album.
Yeah.
It was the work of art on the cover. You know, the picture or whatever. And it was, you know, when you got that, sometimes you'd spent, you know, a bit of time just looking at it and marveling at it, and it was great, you know.
I used to flip through them all the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I actually got one signed by one of my idols.
Yeah, who was that?
It was Chris Vidala. He's actually from Poughkeepsie, New York. He plays with Chuck Mangione.
Ah, right.
I saw him in Rome. Huge mistake. I brought a dry erase marker instead of a Sharpie and didn't know it.
Oh, no.
So I went up, got his autograph, and then an hour later it was gone.
Oh no.
He was my idol, too, so.
Well, at least you got it.
Yeah.
Have you still got the album?
You know, I don't know where it is. It was my mom's album from back in the day.
Right.
And I don't know where it is anymore.
Well, you still get the memory.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
yeah. You still get the memory. You've met him. Was he good? Was he kind to you? And was he pleasant and stuff?
I've met both him and Chuck Mangione. Yeah, I've seen them in different shows.
Right. I mean, there's one of the... I mean, I know we're going to speak about Chuck Mangione in a little bit. But what I was going to say there is I've got a fear of meeting people that are, you know, that I really, really like and... You know, I would love to meet Willie Nelson or something like that. And I'm scared in case he's ignorant and too tired to talk to me, and it really upsets me. You know, and my image of him goes down. You know, so I kind of steer away from even being in that situation if I had the chance.
I was in Lake Placid, and I was a huge, 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 huge Rangers fan growing up. And,
can we just clarify, you know, in Glasgow, the Rangers are a soccer team. They're the biggest rivals of my team, Celtic. The New York Rangers. Thank you. My family would never have allowed me to, for you to sit here and not clarify that.
in 1994, when they won the cup, we watched every game, and Mike Richter was the goalie, right. And I was sitting in Lake Placid, and I was sitting on a bench, and he came out of an elevator right in front of me, and I was just dumbstruck. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, oh my God, that's Mike Richter, and he just walked away, and I thought, oh my God, I missed the chance of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I looked for him all day in Lake Placid. I'm at the same spot at the end of the day waiting for the rest of the family, and he walks back up the corridor, and this time I'm like, I'm not letting this one pass. So I got to meet Mike Richter.
What did you say to him?
I said, I watched every game in 94. I'm a huge fan. And he said, I hope you didn't watch after that.
And so he was pleasant to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I remember I was at a friend's child's, christening. Mm. And we had it in the reception was in a golf club. And one of my idols, the legendary Billy McNeil, who is the first man of the Celtic team and the first man in Britain to lift the European Cup.
Oh, wow.
And he was walking to the door to let us in, having played a game of golf. And he looked at all of the guys in the group were just dumbstruck like you, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. And we're all standing there. And he said, are you Rangers fans? And we were like, no. And he went, yeah, I realised that because you're all good looking. And we were all like laughing, you know, and it was like we're all just walking away and we're all men, you know, and it was all these guys about 55, 60, and we were all just children and we're all like, we just met Billy McNeil.
Hey, Brian, what did Richter mean by I hope you didn't see after that?
Apparently he was not happy with his performance after the 94 Cup. So,
like in his professional
career? In his professional career. Oh, he told me, I hope you didn't watch much after that.
Was he getting older? Or?
It was toward the end of his career, probably. He played for several years after that. But
nice. Yeah. I met Dominic Kashuk when I was a kid. You know, he got his autograph.
Who?
And Dominic Kashuk.
He was the Sabres goalie, right?
Yeah, goalie of the Buffalo Sabres in the mid-90s. And he had just started, I think he was the backup goalie for Grant Fuhr. And that's who I really wanted to meet, was Grant Fuhr. But Dominic Kashuk came out of the locker room, and I was like, all right. Well, I have one of those cards. I guess I'll get that signed. And I kind of pushed in there and got this card signed. And then a few after me, he's like, okay, no more. I get you next time. I get you. And even as like a nine-year-old, I was like, dude, there is no next time. These kids come to a game like once a year, and to be in this position to get a card signed. So I was like, well, you know, it's not the card that I wanted, but I'm thankful to have gotten it. And then he ended up being the best goalie in the world for at least a few years in the late 90s and early 2000s. He was in the Olympics, and he's from Czechoslovakia, I think, Czech Republic.
Right.
And
have you still got the card?
Oh, yeah.
Are you think you'll be able to make money off of it one day?
Probably not. I mean, just maybe like, you know, 200 years from now, but... It's not. I think it's
worth about $300.
Adjusted for inflation, that's 25 cents.
Right.
But I think part of the value of signatures is like the card itself. So, and it was just, you know.
And you know, like Brian was saying earlier about the music, you look at it and it takes you back to that memory, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So. Excellent. Shall we move on then?
Next item.
Okay. The next item is another song, and it's by the man you were mentioning there, Chuck Mangione. And it's a song, it's Main Squeeze.
Yeah.
Tell us about that song.
Well, this is from the Live at the Hollywood Bowl. This is the two-record album that I had as a kid that was my mom's.
Right.
Again, my brother and I listened to this nonstop. He was a trumpet player. I was a saxophone player, and trumpet and saxophone are two of the main things there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, flugelhorn, really. But And so this whole album was just, I was into the whole album.
Right.
And this one, you know, I had to choose for length because some of the songs are a little bit long. But this is a little more upbeat. It's kind of his encore piece, actually, that he did. So. Right. It showcases both Chris Vidal from Poughkeepsie and a guitarist who was phenomenal.
Right. And I assume that you've seen him a number of times.
I have. I've seen both Chris Vidal and Chuck Mangione individually in very small venues where you get to get up and really talk to them. And then I've seen the whole the whole band and the whole orchestra, the whole right. just like they did at the Hollywood Bowl, they did it at a lot of different palaces and stuff. So I got to see them at the Stanley in Utica, mm-hmm. and it was just like being at the Hollywood Bowl.
Fantastic.
All the good stuff. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Excellent. Now, you know he's from Rochester.
Chuck Mangione's from Rochester.
And one of the interesting things I was finding out about him, you know, a lot of the things I was researching you've already mentioned, but one of the things I found out was that he plays himself, or a caricature of himself, and he's played it for a number of times on a number of episodes in King of the Hill.
Oh my god, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he plays this character who has been contracted to visit these stores and play like a song, and every song he plays comes back to one of his most famous songs. I can't remember the name of the song offhand, but he plays a character that it's an image of him in the '70s, and he plays he's contracted to do 400 appearances at these stores, these fictitious mm-hmm. stores, and he can't really feasibly. Keep up to it all, and because he can't play his instrument, he can't see his kids and his family and all that, because he's having to go from all over the country to do these special appearances. But as a consequence of being in King of the Hill, on one of his albums, he has a song called Peggy Hill.
Huh.
As a kind of joke
sure.
thing. So the next time you're looking for his albums, you can see if you can find the song Peggy Hill.
Let's check it out. Chuck Mangione, Main Squeeze.
again, we'd like to thank you on behalf of General Grant Geisman on the guitar, James Jailbait Bradley on the drum, Charles Lee Man Meeks on the bass, Mitch Vidal on everything, and this is my main squeeze. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That was the great Chuck Mangione, main squeeze. A couple of things I want to mention. He started off his musical career working with his brother in bands. I don't know if you know that, Brian.
No, I don't really know much history.
But he also he went on to do some acting, if you like, working in television. He'd done a bit of... he composed a bit of music for The Cannonball Run, with Button, which starred... Richard Button there, but it's Burt Reynolds. And he also did a soundtrack for The Children of Sanchez, starring the late Anthony Quinn.
That's one of his best songs on that album, Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Anyway, we shall move on to something more relaxing. Fly rods. I presume it's for fly fishing.
Yeah.
So, why do you fly fish?
Oh yeah, fishing is my biggest passion.
Excellent.
It's something that I have done since I was really really little. Right. Fly fishing is it's technique. It's reading water. It's
an art form, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I actually teach fly casting and I guide. I'm a New York State Outdoor Guide, and I guide fly fishing trips and different kinds of trips. But if I were to bring one thing, and this kind of echoes what I bring to our camp in Old Forge, number one thing, my fishing gear goes along, and it's usually my fly rod.
Well, it gives you if you've got that, you've got the chance to eat some food, haven't you? If you're going hungry, so
if you need to.
What kind of fish do you catch with a fly rod?
I mean, the fly rod, it's mostly trout. I do trips out to the Salmon River and different tributaries of the Great Lakes for steelhead, and that's probably my ultimate favorite. Mm. You know, you're talking, 24 to 30 inch fish on a fly rod that are just going nuts.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
Oh man, I don't even know. I've caught some really, really big steelhead and big salmon, probably 30 pound salmon on a fly rod.
Wow.
Now, have you ever done the old... It was that big, but it got away.
I take pictures and video.
Being a technically gifted man, he takes photographs.
That's one of my pet peeves, actually, is people always exaggerate. And so I always weigh my bigger fish if they're a bass, and I'll measure my bigger fish if they're a trout.
Do you have a GoPro or anything that you can wear? And
I do. I have a GoPro. Our guiding website. So we're part of the White Dog Trail Company. It's a guiding business that my stepdad and his buddy formed over 30 years ago. And so I just recently joined them, but I run all the social media for them. And so I bought a GoPro, and I've started to do just since March or so, I started to do my own GoPro videos, and we've got them up.
What is GoPro? I don't really know what that is.
It's a camera that you wear or mount on different things, and it takes nice quality HD video. Right. And then you splice everything together and make a video that you can put on social media or on YouTube.
All right.
Or whatever.
Excellent.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, Brian, if somebody wanted to get into fly fishing, what would you recommend? What's kind of the first step?
For the most part, if somebody wants to get into fly fishing, it's generally for fishing a stream for trout.
Hmm.
And this
isn't like a relaxing, you throw your bobber and you're warm
in
the water.
Nope. There's a lot. It's very difficult. There's the casting portion of it. There's knowing your equipment. But there's the whole understanding the whole bug life and the different stages and figuring out what the fish are feeding on. You could have fish rising in front of you all day, and I've done this, like you literally are casting to the same fish that are rising all around and they won't touch your fly, and then finally you figure out what they're biting on and it's just one after another. So there's complete frustration at times and complete euphoria at times. It's very difficult to sometimes figure out what they're biting on.
And correct me, Brian, but it's my understanding that the fish will feed on insects according to the particular stage of development the insect is supposed to be in.
Yep.
So they know when the insects are nymphs or when they're adults.
Yep.
And if you're casting an adult when it's nymph season, they're not going to bite.
Exactly.
And I mean, the knowledge just of that to me blows me away. And then do you tie your own flies?
I do. I tie my own flies. And that's, salmon and steelhead is easy because you're mostly imitating eggs. The trout stuff where you're imitating different flies. So there's so many different types of flies that hatch, different sizes, different colors, different shapes.
I didn't even know any of this.
And then, you've got the nymph form of it. And then you've got the emerging form of it as it's coming from nymph into.
Wow.
Then there's the dry fly, which is the adult, basically. And then there's a spinner when they die and they float down.
A spinner?
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow. Now, my cousin, I don't know if he still does, but he's a well-renowned fly maker around the world.
Really?
His name's Bill McElroy from Scotland. He stays in England, but he's... Wow. Been in quite a few magazines and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Billy, I was actually working in Catskill High School and I mentioned this guy. This boy was a fly fisher and I said, yeah, my uncle makes flies. He said, what's his name? And I said, Billy McElroy. And his jaw dropped. I thought he was winding me up. He says, the Billy McElroy? And I says, yeah. And he's like, wow. And he couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Yeah. But when I say my cousin, I've only met him about three times. So... But that's interesting. A lot of these, I didn't realize how technical it would be.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be.
It's interesting as you're teaching somebody, it comes natural to you after so many years, and you see their struggles as they're learning how to do it. And it's a lot to think about at once, honestly, until it becomes natural and fluid for you.
So any other type of fishing just isn't fishing to you?
I love all types of fishing, honestly. Right. I have a boat. I do bass fishing. I don't fly fish every time. I think the thing that I like most about the way that I fish is that I do it all.
Right.
Nice. Yeah.
Now, Brian, we got to move on. Another item you'd like to take is a guitar.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. When did you start playing the guitar? What type of guitar?
You know, I really like acoustic guitar. I'm not really into electric or anything like that. But, back in college, I kind of got into Dave Matthews and a few different things. But a lot of my guys in the same hall as me were playing guitar. And I was always musical and I'd always kind of wanted to play. So I started learning a little bit on theirs, and I don't read music or anything like that, but I can play chords, I can listen, and I can imitate. So I kind of became one of those college guitar players that all they did was play Dave Matthews.
Nice.
I was one of those annoying people. But
you've got to learn somehow, haven't you?
I don't pull it out very often, but every once in a while I'll pull it out and just, it relaxes me. I enjoy playing. And I don't just play Dave Matthews, I play other stuff, but not much.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, some guitar trivia, just quickly, Mike. And did you know that Leo Fender, the inventor of Fender guitars, never actually learned to play the guitar? He was first an accountant who started his guitar business after several failed jobs. And then his biggest forte in terms of playing an instrument was the saxophone.
No kidding. So yeah, guitars.
I just thought I'd throw that in. Sorry, mate. I thought I interrupted you there. Are you going to say something?
Well, speaking of Dave Matthews, we have a song lined up here. Dave Matthews Band, Ants Marching. This is live at Red Rocks. Now, this song, Dave Matthews has described as his anthem, wrote the music and lyrics prior to its first performance in 1991. And I actually found out, I didn't realize this, Dave Matthews is South African.
Yes.
Born in South Africa, moved to Westchester County in New York, to England. His father died. Then he moved back to South Africa with his mother. But this is in the mid-1980s, and he was actually conscripted into the South. He was facing conscription into the South African military during the civil disobedience that was happening because of apartheid.
Wow.
He was like wrapped up in the middle of that.
I did not know that.
And he got out of there, came back to the United States. He's a Quaker and a pacifist. moved to Virginia and got involved in community theater and music and just started a band.
Yep.
And
wow.
Yeah, really a fascinating story. A lot of cool folks come out of South Africa.
I just thought the guy was an American.
Yeah, no.
My ignorance has been highlighted here.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of really interesting people coming out of South Africa.
Yeah, Elon Musk, Charlize Theron,
Nelson Mandela. Stephen Biko.
Hey everybody, God bless you. Y'all been great. Thank you so much for staying up with us tonight. Y'all keep well. We'll see you again, no doubt.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, that's 90.7 FM. That was Dave Matthews' band, Ants Marching, and today we have Brian Spinner. Brian, you have a topographical map. Why did you decide to bring that?
Well, I'm an outdoor guy, and if I'm going to a camp, I'm going to go exploring. So whether it's a stream or a mountain or whatever, give me a map of the area so I can go explore and find stuff. Most likely I'm going to look for that stream with my fly rod, though.
And you're pretty comfortable reading topo maps?
Yeah, for the most part. I want my GPS, though, yeah. Honestly.
I hate GPSs.
I remember learning how to read topo maps in like earth science in high school and kind of getting the hang of it. And now when I look at them, it's just like the red squiggly line that is the path going over many other black squiggly lines.
Right.
And I can kind of see where a mountain is, but you know, whether it's going, you're going up or down.
Yeah.
Or
In order to get the guide's license, I mean, we did have to show that we could read map and use compass and stuff like that. But
right.
I would still much rather have a GPS to tell me exactly where I am.
Yeah. Have you ever done orienteering?
Not really. I honestly tend to, I'll stick to a trail. I'm not going to do much bushwhacking or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
I know a lot of people do like, you know, geocaching and different things like that. I've never really been into any of that kind of stuff.
I have no concept of what the pleasure one gains from geocaching.
I don't know. For me, it's about being outdoors and, being in the wildlife and,
yeah.
You know, you don't necessarily know what's around you until you sit down and be quiet and just wait for life to kind of evolve around you.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree.
When animals start coming out and, yeah.
Yeah, I've recently took up kayaking with my girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And we go and we've been finding, you know, some of these small streams and, you know, and where you see all the birds and the snapping turtles and stuff like that, and the insect. One of the things that I really enjoy is the dragonflies landing on you.
Yeah,
and you're sitting having a bite to eat or something. One lands in your hand. It's almost like it's coming to say hello. You know.
Yeah.
And that to me is the simplicities of life, and
yeah.
it allows you to relax. You know, things like that. I thoroughly enjoy that.
Yeah.
Now, Brian, another item. The last item you'd like to bring is a road bike. Bikes became popular in the mid-19th century, and I thought it would be older than that, but they're really kind of a new thing. There have been twice as many bikes produced as automobiles, and the bicycle, the modern bicycle, is an advancement of what was called the velocipede, and that was, you know, the old-timey big wheel in the front, small wheel in the back style things. That was a velocipede. And
what was the other one? The Penny Farthing?
No, what is that?
The Penny Farthing was the British version, I think. You know, the penny obviously, the farthing is a part of the old coin system in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the big ginormous wheel.
Huh.
Mm. Remember the, you know, if you ever seen that picture, the big giant wheel, and then the tiny wheel at the back.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's the same one you're talking about.
Yeah, same idea.
Yeah, it's called the penny farthing in Britain.
Oh, okay.
So,
And originally bikes were, I think, kind of like Fred Flintstone style leg propelled, but apparently, possibly, the first mechanically propelled two-wheeled vehicle may have been built by a gentleman, Kirkpatrick Macmillan, a Scottish blacksmith.
That sounds a Scottish name, doesn't it?
In 1839, although that's been disputed. He is also associated, and I find this appropriate, Andy, with the first recorded instance of a cycling traffic offense. When a Glasgow newspaper in 1842 reported an accident in which an anonymous gentleman from Dumfriesshire bestride a velocipede of ingenious design, knocked over a little girl in Glasgow, and was fined 5 shillings.
Step aside.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Probably a little hard to control that big wheel.
Yes, yeah. These pesky Glaswegians, you know. That's just anger-driven.
And lastly...
Well, hold on. You know, sorry. Just talking of speed and aggression, do you know how fast the fastest bike has ever been went and it's been recorded at?
No.
Take a guess.
Oh, God.
I'd say 100 miles an hour.
I was going to say the same.
Well, take a guess.
101.
Oh, 101, Bob.
167 miles an hour.
Jeez.
You can imagine crashing at that speed.
No. Yeah, no.
I've never even driven a car that speed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Give yourself any sort of wings and you would take right off. They'd be kind of cool. You know?
That'd be scary.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were going to say, Mike, I interrupted you again this show.
That's okay. Our last song, Cannonball Adderley. Adderley?
Adderley, yep.
Cannonball Adderley, Walk Tall. Why this song, Brian?
You know, this goes, this again goes back to my later childhood where my brother and I were, we had our own band with various different names depending on what year it was. But we were basically a jazz and funk band, and I had to have something from like one of the great jazz legends. But I really, really like Cannonball Adderley because there's a lot of groove, and it's not like a lot of the freestyle stuff you get with like Miles Davis or Dizzy Gillespie and stuff like that. So I really, really like music that's got groove to it. So this was one of those. And again, it's a saxophone and a trumpet a lot of times. And that was me and my brother. So we were always looking for those songs that we could play in our band. And this was one of them.
Here we go. Like I said before, there are times when things don't lay the way they're supposed to lay. But regardless, you're supposed to hold your head up high and walk tall. Walk tall.
That was Cannonball Adderley, Walk Tall. Very soothing, very short song, but very...
I had to have one short one.
Yeah, it was a really great song. I enjoyed it. Now, do you know how he got his name Cannonball?
I don't. I figured it wasn't his real name, but I don't.
Yeah, but it wasn't christened Cannonball. The reason he got his nickname, the word Cannonball derived from cannibal, a title imposed on him by high school colleagues as a result of his voracious appetite. So, just thought I'd throw that in.
Would he go after somebody's arm or leg? Or
so he must have just ate the house up or something. But really good choice. Thanks for picking that song. That was great. Now, we've come to the end of the show. And it's been great having you on the show, Brian. It's been interesting listening to your stories.
It's been fun. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really enjoyed having you on. Now, before we go, we like to ask our guests one last question. And that question is, Mike?
Brian, how do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Yes, but if you did drink coffee...
I wouldn't. Hi, I'm Brian Spinner, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.